Hi, this is Carrie Brownstein.
This is DJ Premier.
This is Darren Aronofsky.
You got the RZA right here.
Rose McGowan.
Right here. Ahead.
Aisha Tyler.
A Tribe Called Quest.
Fred Armisen.
Fritz Paul.
Javier Munoz. Seth Meyers.
Frankie Cosmos.
Flying Lotus.
Hi, we're Chaim. And you're listening to the Talk House Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Talk House Podcast. I'm Josh Modell. We've got a rare trio episode for you this week since two of our guests created something very cool together. It's Joe Firestone, Marissa Paternoster, and Joe Steinhardt. I'll start with Joe Firestone, the actor, writer, comedian, podcaster, game inventor, and probably some other stuff that I'm forgetting that you may have seen on the show Joe Para Talks With You or like a million other things. She's done stand-up specials and albums. She's written for The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, and she hosts the game-centric podcast Dr. Game Show. Firestone is currently the head writer on After Midnight, the comedy-slash-game-show hybrid that airs late every night on CBS. In other words, she's busy, so we're psyched that she could take the time to do this. But she wasn't too busy to chat with her friends Marissa Paternoster and Joe Steinhardt about their new graphic novel, Merriment. You may recognize Paternoster as the singer and guitarist for the amazing, recently broken-up band Screaming Females, and Talkhouse readers and listeners may even recognize her illustrations, which have appeared on the site over the years. Paternoster continues to make music, but the focus of this chat is Merriment, her first graphic novel. Paternoster put her eerie, singular images to a story by her old friend Joe Steinhardt, head of the long-running independent label Don Giovanni Records, which has been home to a number of incredible bands over the past two decades, including Screaming Females. These three have a fun, loose chat about Merriment, which, in case I didn't say it yet, you should definitely check out, as well as Steinhardt's not-so-secret desires to be a comedian, Paternoster's can't-fail movie idea, how Firestone was once tasked with selling St. Louis pizza with a New York attitude, and a game I'd never heard of before called Somebody Pooped in the Salad. Enjoy.
All right.
You okay, we got to set the scene for the listeners.
Yeah.
I've never set a scene before, Joe. I feel like you might have the most experience with scene setting.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess I've had a lot of experience scene setting. But yeah, I guess I'm with here with you two, and I just read your graphic novel, Merriment, which I enjoyed so much.
How long did it take you to read it?
Oh, no, I really was like, I'll just read a little chunk every day. Like, I'll just pace it out. And then I spent the whole Sunday. I got it on a Friday, read Sunday.
I heard it takes about 45 minutes. Maybe that person was bragging.
The thing about it is you could race through it if you wanted to, but then you want to stick around with all the little drawings. And it's like, you don't want to go too fast. It's like cake. You don't want to eat it too fast. It's so good. I really enjoyed it so much. I really thought I was going to just take my time with it. And that, even that, I felt like I was racing through it.
Did you like it as much as some cakes that you've had recently?
I liked it better than cake.
All of them?
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
All of them.
Are you a fan of cake?
I had a piece of cake this week. I went to Super Nintendo World with my nephews and niece, and at Toad's Cafe, which is really hard to get into. You have to make a reservation to stand in line. It's like make a reservation to stand in line at Burger King, but they have a cake that has three flavors, and it was good, but this was better.
That's a lot of flavors for just one piece of cake.
Chocolate, strawberry, and vanilla.
The Neapolitan Toad.
Yeah.
Joe, are you eating cake right now?
I'm eating cookies, but I have like one. Eating like one more cookie.
That's like cake.
Yeah. You saved the cookie for this, for when we started recording?
No, I've been eating them the whole time. Maybe you didn't notice. I was trying to finish the cookies before we started. I literally have one bite left.
I forgot about setting the scene.
Oh, yeah, we got to set the scene.
Right.
So you two work together on this book, Merriment, and this is your first collaboration. Do you want to introduce yourselves?
And you never introduced yourself either. We already fucked this up.
Okay, Marissa, tell us who you are.
Yeah, you go first.
Oh, my name's Marissa. My legal name is Marissa Paternoster. I was born in Elizabeth, New Jersey, 37 years ago. Not to the day. I draw stuff, play music, and that's it.
That was really, really good. Set.
I
didn't know we were doing ages. I'm already a little.
Yeah,
we're
doing icebreakers. Sorry, I thought I was going to do a more thorough introduction to me, and you know, but then I was like, I got to give Joe some time to set his scene.
I thought it was pretty good. I mean, Joe, you can tell us your age, but you could also just tell us three lies. It's hard to say what you want to do.
You know that game, like, Two Truths and a Lie?
Sure.
Oh, of course you do. You're, like, a game expert, right? So, which we haven't got you yet, but you must, surely you know that game.
Thank you so much for setting the scene. Yeah.
Sometimes I'll either tell three lies or three truths.
Oh.
And I'll wait till somebody guesses, and then I'll just, like, I'll try to make them all very gray areas. It's kind of cheating at that game.
Wow.
But when you mentioned three lies, I was like, oh, yeah, sometimes I'll just find three things that are, like, gray area lies or gray area truths.
Wow.
So I always win. Isn't that bad?
I don't know that game.
Sounds like you've never worked in a corporate office, which is
yes,
fantastic.
It's a classic corporate icebreaker.
Guys, guess what? Never. I never have. It's
never.
True. No. I did icebreakers in college.
Oh, okay.
I'm old enough that I'm now the one, like, giving out the icebreakers at two college students.
Why would you do that to people?
Because... Got to get college students. I teach college students. This is backwards. My name's Joe Steinhardt.
Mm-hmm.
And I also worked on Merriment with Marissa. I guess if we're being honest, I was born almost 40 years ago, but this June. I teach at Drexel to people that I hope never end up listening to this podcast.
Oh, okay.
Even though I don't know where we're going yet. I don't know. Maybe I'll want them to, but I'm assuming I won't.
Okay. And this is your first collaboration?
Kind of. We've worked on music together.
Right.
But in, like, goof, and we've worked on other things. Like, and by worked on music together, Marissa might not even want to, like, call it that. So, but some technical level we have.
What? Oh, the music that we actually, like, I played on your record?
Yeah. It's not like we don't, but we haven't really worked on it together in the same way as something like this, you know?
No, I actually I think I played all the instruments on your
record.
You did. You didn't do anything.
Yeah. I was hoping you were going to sing it, actually.
You watched football on your phone. You were gambling on your phone the whole time.
I wasn't gambling.
I think you were a little bit, at least.
Your students are listening to this podcast, Joe. You need to get it together.
It was a sensible amount of gambling.
Well, I think people will often assume that I am constantly gambling and doing, like, fantasy sports and March Madness brackets. And actually, I don't do very much of that, but I follow sports to a level where people, like, do. So I think they just assume that surely that's the only reason I would be interested in watching, you know, whatever I'm watching at the time. But it's actually much darker than that. It's like I'm actually not gambling on it. That would be a less dark excuse. So that's me, Joe. Who are you? We're both named Joe. That's confusing.
Yeah.
When it's not visual. This is audio, so it's kind of trouble.
Yeah, but it's not. I think if Marissa's like, Joe, tell me your deepest secret, then we're in trouble. But otherwise, I feel like we have distinct enough voices.
Yeah, it's true.
I feel optimistic. But I'm a comedian and writer, but I am trying to figure out. I'm in Los Angeles right now. That's another thing about me. It's pivotal. 37. Pivotal. So the other thing that I was trying to figure out is how we did first cross paths. Concrete memory.
I know. Well, my band Screaming Females came on Dr. Game Show and we played a game that we used to play sometimes, like, at people's houses after shows called Somebody Pooped in the Salad, which is like a role-playing game wherein one person had to be a member of the wait staff and then another person had to be a customer. And if you were the customer, you had to order a salad. That was required. And then you were kind of role-playing, and the person who was role-playing, the waiter, had to say, eventually, I'm sorry, you can't have the salad because why? Somebody pooped in it. And then the first person who laughed lost. And it could go on for as long as the two people wanted it to go on.
Wow.
It was a good game.
It was a great game.
Yeah, and then we crossed paths at a Chris Gethard show we did together. At the Knitting Factory, I believe. That was the first time I met you.
Yes.
Is that the one
you
did stand-up at, Joe?
Yeah.
For his record release show, correct?
Yep. I've done stand-up in my life twice in a formal setting. So I don't know if I'm a... I don't know what that makes me.
It's all about state of mind, isn't it?
Yeah. Marissa, actually, if we're talking about comedy, I recorded a stand-up album long before I ever hit the stage with Marissa in the studio and then shelved it. But I think it was actually a really good album.
I have it somewhere.
But no one's ever recorded a studio. It's not skits. It's like I'm just doing the jokes.
Quiet? You did jokes?
Well, Marissa and like one or two other people were there in the studio, but not exactly as an audience, if that makes sense. So it was just a quiet, but you hear them like reacting sometimes.
Whoa, that's like, honestly, that's probably like one of the more artistic approaches to a comedy album. You might want to release it.
I've been circling the comedy drain almost my whole life, but afraid to kind of like fall in.
Circling in fact, the comedy drain, and it goes to hell? Or where does it go? Where does the drain go?
That's what I'm afraid to find out, Joe. Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think that's the thing. I've been circling it, but I used to tell jokes opening for Screaming Females, I believe.
I think you did a couple times.
Yeah. How did it go?
Awful, I think. And so when Chris Gethard, we did his record, I said I would do stand-up, and then I had to write stand-up, and then I did it, and then I never did it again until we released a second record. And if we do a third one, I'll have to put together a new set, I guess. But I've always wanted to be a joke writer, and that's not a job, apparently, in the way that I want to do it.
Oh, how do you?
I want to write jokes for stand-up comedians.
I think that's literally Joe's job.
You want to write for stand-up comedians?
You're like a ghostwriter, yeah. So I know you can write jokes for like, you can, yeah, like your job is essentially in some ways probably like a joke writer in some sense, or people write for Seth Meyers or whatever. But I want to ghostwrite and sell jokes, like one joke at a time, to stand-up comics. And I've honestly been trying to do that for 20 years. I might have tried to sell you jokes at the Knitting Factory, and I usually get this reaction of like just sheer confusion.
I think you need to go for richer comedians. I think you're surrounding yourself with the dregs. I think you need to go for people that are so successful that they don't have time to write their own material. They're nowhere near the Knitting Factory, you know, rest in peace. But I think you need to go for, you know, the top tier, you know. You see them on Netflix, you know what I mean? That's the goal.
I don't know how to meet those guys.
Peacock. I don't think you should go for Peacock. I think you should go for Netflix, and if you have to, HBO Max, if you have to. But I think those people are probably have enough time, they're writing their own jokes. You need to go to the top tier, okay? Like, you need to go for people that haven't seen a normal person in 25 years, okay? That they don't know. You need to people that are like, wait, what's it like to stand in line for a Burger King? You know what I mean?
So your advice for me starting in stand-up is to start at the top?
Yes.
Okay.
Joe's saying you need to sell jokes to the people who can go straight into Toad's Diner.
Yes, for sure. They do not need a reservation. They do not need to stand in line. Yeah. That would be amazing. But also, it's like, these people, they could set, like, I don't know. I've never been to an arena show of a stand-up comedian, but I feel like they could probably crush, no matter, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I saw Sinbad in an arena.
I bet he crushed with every joke, and I bet some of those jokes he bought. Maybe. Oh, I don't know. Maybe he writes all of his own material. But I feel like some people at the top, they don't have time. And they're like, what's a normal human again? And that's where you got to come in.
But this is the problem. Like, I know how to find the people at the Knitting Factory, rest in peace. I don't know where I'd find Sinbad, you know?
You gotta stand outside.
And be like, I got jokes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
IMDb Pro. These things are, listen, but Liz, can we talk about the graphic novel? I have a question.
Sure.
I have a question. I just loved when everyone kept saying that they kept sleeping with Liz's boyfriends. I thought that was so great. I thought it was so funny and so poignant, the whole book. But I wanted to know, okay, Joe, did you just write the whole thing as a manuscript? And then, Marissa, did you come in and draw everything? I've never seen anyone that looks like these people. And I loved it. And I'm like, how did you think of these people? Do you draw like this all the time?
Unfortunately, yeah.
I loved it. I've never seen drawings like this before.
Yeah, I feel like I would like to try again, because I did kind of make everybody look maybe a little bit too similar. I gave everyone like different hair to try and differentiate the characters. With all that being said, I am still very new to comics. I've drawn a lot of comics, but never a graphic novel. I don't know what I'm doing. And so I feel like I could have probably done better visual character development, but everyone, bear with me, it's my first time. So as long as you could tell who was who, that's great. And I don't know, I mean, I have a little bit of a reputation as someone who draws from drawing scary things, and I think all these people were pretty scary, not scary looking, they looked just like they were in the throes of abject despair.
Yes.
But I think that was kind of the vibe, thankfully happened to be the vibe of what I read when Joe sent it to me, so I thought, oh, well, you know, I fit the ticket. This might work out.
Yeah.
And yeah, so Joe wrote all of the words. And he sent me, you know, like a couple pages every week with kind of the general gist of what he wanted the panels to look like and what the characters would be saying. And I had a lot of creative freedom, but at the same time, since you read Merriment, there's not a lot of action. It's just mostly mm-hmm. people having these, you know, delightful conversations. Mm-hmm. And so it was up to me to kind of, I guess, keep the reader / viewer engaged in these conversations. So I did that to the best of my abilities, the novice that I am. But yeah, I tried to just really lean into that sadness.
No, I think it worked so well.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wrote it like, I guess, a storyboard, as they'd call it in the industry. So, I mean, I literally can't draw. I wish people saw the early, the first storyboards. I was actually trying to use like stick figures and stuff. And then it actually was more efficient to just use words to like describe what would happen in each panel, which was a lot of times just like not much to describe and trying to describe a look. And yeah, Marissa just did this incredible job kind of bringing these like looks and things. Saying to life feels weird, like to death, to purgatory. But I think she did a really good like job with that. I finished writing it, and then I really wanted her to draw it, you know, because I know her style well. And if she said no, I actually don't know what I would have done. So because I like her drawings, I felt like even when writing it, it just felt like something like a Marissa and I project, because we share a very similar humor, very similar like when we go on tour or travel or even just like are going on long drives somewhere together, we are basically just like doing dumb characters and things like that to each other. And so many of the things in this book are just like things where I'm like, Marissa's going to understand this.
I've never had a conversation like the Liv sleeping with, or Liv having, everyone slept with Liv's boyfriend. That seems like something that would happen on The Real Housewives, which is also something I've never seen. But like that seemed like it would be a big blowout. Like I want to know what happened after they drank the coffee and all of that came out. Did they all storm out of the diner or did they just keep hanging? Do you know Joe Steinhardt?
Yeah.
I know Joe.
I do. I do. Because I think they keep hanging out.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you would reveal it in the sequel or something.
No. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot I feel like that you don't reveal in these things, but like you reveal they keep hanging out and it's really awkward.
That sounds horrible.
And then maybe someone actually text messages the other one something they don't want to say out loud about like what's going on.
Yeah. You nailed the dysfunction of friendship that has lasted over 15 years. Like you just, that was so clear, like they're so sick of each other and that they just kind of still hang out perfect.
You can't make new friends at the age we're all at. You just kind of have the friends that you have and they've mm-hmm. grown into very different people at times, but they're still your friends.
Did you all have a favorite character?
I'm a Denise head.
Yeah, Denise seems solid. Cool. Yeah.
You probably have a special affinity to Joe. Was that weird seeing your name in print?
No, I've seen a few Joes in media recently. So,
wow.
But I like Joe. I thought Little Joe Women was really solid. Little Women. What's the other one? The League of Their Own.
Oh, yeah. Little Women. And then the Little Women remake.
And Little Women remake.
Littler Women.
Littler Women.
Littlest Women.
Yeah, I thought that Denise was pretty great.
Yeah, I would want Denise to come, like, get me out of jail. Oh. Like, I would memorize her phone number.
Yeah.
I love Denise, and then she's almost equally flawed to, like, the other characters, which I think is what I really like about her as a character, right? Like,
because of her taste in women?
Honestly, I didn't even think about that, yeah.
She has such bad taste in women.
Yeah, likes really boring conversation.
We're all kind of all these characters at different times. And it's kind of like the angel and the devil on the shoulder. But I feel like we all have like Mac and Denise, you know, that is more realistic. We have Mac on one shoulder and Denise on the other. And then we kind of exist in between those two people or two characters at times. You know, I found myself being all these different characters, even like the mom and stuff like that. I've been mm-hmm. that.
That's a special you know? Relationship too. Yeah.
I've definitely been the daughter and I've definitely been the mom in that relationship.
Yeah, I was reading it and I was like, oh, this is like a hangout story. Like they're just hanging out and it's kind of like this is a world where nothing happens. And then it became more plot driven than I thought it would be. And was that like expected all, like, was that kind of planned all along that it would be like when Marissa, when you were getting the pages as they go, were you expecting it to have such a, like a nice wrap? I like really thought it was going to be more like the kind of sprawling adventures of these two people.
I read it before I started drawing it. So I knew that, spoiler alert, effectively nothing really happens, sort of, but something does happen and it's not inconsequential, but it still kind of is very open-ended and open to reader interpretation. I do this kind of like subplot of, you know, Mac essentially like losing touch with reality while, you know, going through the motions of like her daily life and hanging out with her friends and, you know, kind of like embarking on this new like romantic relationship and all that stuff. Beneath all that stuff is this kind of like nefarious subplot. And so it kind of kept me engaged as a reader when I first read it, because I was just like, what's going to happen? You know, I want to know what the hell's going to happen. And then I'm not going to say out loud what's going to happen because I already kind of did. But I feel like in an oblique enough way that people might still wonder what happens. But I thought that was those kind of two things rubbing up against each other were like pretty. So there was a gross way to explain that. But you know what I mean? The tension between those two like plots running parallel to each other was like pretty interesting to me.
Hey, this is Josh Modell, host of the Talkhouse podcast. We love it when musicians come on the show and talk about process, and often they'll get into the nuts and bolts of being a working artist, which can sometimes be fun and sometimes feel more like a business. Well, this episode of Talkhouse is brought to you by DistroKid, which is an amazing service for musicians looking to get their songs out into the world in an incredibly smart and cost-effective way. For the past decade plus, DistroKid has made it easy to get your music on all the streaming services, including Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Instagram, and more. You keep 100% of your earnings minus a flat yearly fee, which is a better deal than you'll find anywhere else. More than a million artists use DistroKid, and the latest version of their app is better than ever. It includes features that make it easy to see your account details, including the money you've earned, as well as to seamlessly edit things like lyrics and metadata across platforms. There's even a feature called Instant Share, which allows you to easily share files with your bandmates, booking agent, playlist curators, and more. Distro Lock allows you to protect your songs. DistroKid users get a YouTube official artist channel, too. The list goes on. The DistroKid app is available on iOS and Android. Go check it out today.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.
Hey, Talkhouse listeners, it's Josh Modell. Instead of encouraging you to listen to podcasts today, I'm here to encourage you to read something great. The particular something I have in mind is the second issue of the Talkhouse Reader, the print zine spearheaded by our fantastic music editor, Annie Fell. This issue is focused on the intersection of food and music, and it features contributions from Maddie Matheson, Coleman Domingo, Squirrel Flower, Sam Evian, The Blessed Madonna, and more. There are pieces about eating while on tour, the gentrification of food, cooking as a creative catalyst, and much, much more. You can order a copy today, along with the first issue, at store.talkhouse.com. Please do check it out.
I was just wondering if you kind of were writing this like with a really strong structure going into it, an outline, or were you like, let's get to know these characters and then see where it goes?
I approached it more like a cinema verite documentary where I kind of created the characters and then I kind of would just, I'd think of a random scene that would play out and I would just kind of write that scene and then I would write another scene. And honestly, I know I was like kind of joking about being a joke writer, but sometimes I would just have a really good joke and I'm not a comedian. I don't have a stage to tell it on. So I'd like, oh, I'll just have a character. I'll just like have a character like say this because it's kind of funny. And so I had these little ideas and I had sort of these scenes and then eventually enough of them kind of came together that I started to shuffle them into a story. And then there was this big like epiphany. I've never actually read those Sid Field books, but I feel like in those books, it's like every story needs a body, or that's somewhere written something like that. Like if every story you need like a body or something, I don't know who said that. But I was like, well, I don't know how to insert a body into a story where it's just kind of people like talking about their anxieties and things like that. And then when I sort of started to figure out this way to insert a body into it, it actually like created the whole story. I think there's this sense that if you make a graphic novel or anything, it's like autobiographical, and it's certainly not, but there's also a lot of me in it, you know, because I can't not be myself. But like, there was this event that happened to me where I was like, I don't get high very often, and I never did, but I was extremely high once, like off of brownies or cookies, because I have a sweet tooth, as you've already seen. And so
I was
extremely high, and I was at a record store with a friend of mine. I was on tour, and we were looking at CDs, and they were talking about getting this like Roger Miller CD. And we were on tour, we were playing some shows, and then we were in Providence that night, and that's when I got really high. I was sober at the record store.
Then
later that night. No, it's Izzy. This was with Izzy True.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think they know I wrote this into the... Now they'll find out if they listen to this.
Cool.
And then we went to the show in Providence, where I think Adrian, actually, who you might know, was the one that gave me these pop brownies. And I got extremely high. And then we were at this show, and I had not thought about Roger Miller in like my whole life, basically. And then this CD bought it. And then one of the artists covered like a Roger Miller song and King of the Road. And I was like, hi, and I lost my goddamn mind. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, is this reality? That situation then fascinated me for a long time. Like the power of these like little coincidences, but how thin we are of like losing our mind.
And now I get where you're going with this. I got it now. I was wondering I was wondering if you were high right now, but now I get it.
Right. Something that also made me lose my mind, because I'm a bit paranoid. This is when I was sober, like... I don't mean sober sobriety. Like I just was, I'm not that night I was high. Another time in my life. Another time in my life.
Chaotic.
That I'm not good at this. That someone actually did call me about like a lost, I forget what it was, a loss. They were like, is this like, it wasn't Barbara, but it was like, is this, you know, like Stacy, whatever. And I was like, no, like your number, I'm calling the number that's like written down on this thing. And I was, and it really did freak me out a bit. And then somebody called me, and they said they had like found my lost like wallet or something, and that they called the number.
Sober.
Yeah, this wasn't a high moment.
Who's Barbara?
That was the whole point. Who's Barbara?
What's going on?
Where was the wallet?
I don't know.
Oh, you did lose your wallet.
No, that's what I'm trying to say. See how you're all confused? I was this confused too. I was like, why are you calling me saying that you found my lost wallet, and then that I'm like Stacy or Barbara, but that really did happen to me, and it freaked me out.
All right, yeah.
But then you're like, what if that happens to a person that is also, you know, close to a psychotic break? Will that like tip them over? Will that tip them? It might have tipped them over the edge, the way that Roger Miller song tipped me over the edge that night. And so, yeah, this is why I don't do these. Book talks.
I think you should do more.
I'm trying to write the jokes. Yeah,
did
sorry.
You all sell books today, this afternoon?
Yeah. A couple of them. It was real lousy weather in New Jersey, let me tell you, Joe. You're lucky to be in California.
Oh my
god. What a cruddy day.
It was awful. It was raining cats and dogs.
But yeah, we sold a couple. It was nice to be at our favorite record store.
I spent more money.
They let me see the back room, which was exciting.
What's in the back room?
Like two guys on computers. a lot of stuff that looks like it should be out in the room where you buy records, but I guess it's not like ready to get out there yet. It's not like, you know, finished cooking or whatever. I also got to use the bathroom, which was super exciting because I've had to pee in that establishment so many times and I always have to go to Panera. But this time I got to stay and use their bathroom.
That's awesome.
Was really cool. I know. Have you ever gone to the bathroom at like your favorite like store that doesn't have a public bathroom? Because you go there so much, and eventually they just like acquiesce and they let you go to the bathroom there. It's fun.
Once I learned their boundaries, I just kind of cut that part off of my brain. I said this is never going to happen. But
you should open up.
Yeah, I should probably open that up. I did see the back room of a bookstore that I loved, and I was like, what the hell? Like, it was it was so chaotic back there. Boxes and boxes and boxes. Yeah, two guys on computers. I couldn't believe that was what was going on.
Yeah, they really put on a show for you in the store. You don't even know what's going on in the back. It's chaos.
It feels weird. It feels like another break from reality for a second.
Joe and I used to go to this pizza place in New Brunswick a lot called Tata's, and their logo was like a robot saying hi, saying what's up, bud, to an alien. That was the logo. I don't know what that had to do with the pizza, but it was also called Tata's, so that was funny too. But eventually the guy who owned it, Andy, would let me use the restroom when I was there, like at 3 a.m. or whatever, and I was just thrilled to be back there. I remember taking like a lot of selfies on the toilet with my flip phone.
One of the best days of my life, or maybe probably nights, was at Tata's when he let me use the bathroom, and then he also let me get a close-up of they for some reason only played singles, not full cassettes, which feels weird for a pizza, like background at a pizza place. They had this pile of singles, boombox. And so not just did I get to kind of like use the bathroom and see like behind, but I got to like, he let me look really close at the singles, and he showed me unreleased drawings for unreleased Tata's shirts, and they were weird. There was like a sexy alien lady.
you never told me this. It was a pink...
I don't know how I didn't. It blew my mind.
See, there was Joe, like an
unreleased Tata's art.
This is what you're missing out on because you cut off that part of your heart that might allow you to go into the restroom of your favorite establishment. Joe, you're from the Midwest, right?
Yeah.
I think the first time I was in Indiana. I must have been like 19. I went to go get a slice of pizza because I was hungry. And I found out there for the first time that you can't get just a single slice. And I was incredibly upset. And I think I went back to the van where the boys were. And I was like, guys, you can't get one slice of pizza in these places. You have to get the whole kit and caboodle. And I was really like flummoxed.
Yeah. But you can't get a handgun. Somehow you can get a handgun.
But you can get a slice.
You can get a handgun.
And that's then all of America.
You probably convince them to do one slice. I used to work for a place that was like one of the first slice places in St. Louis. And we were supposed to serve it with a New York attitude.
I would love to see
what is that?
Your New York attitude.
What that means.
Like they would type out we mostly catered to college kids, and college kids don't tip a lot. And so on the receipts, they don't, like, my coworkers would always be typing in like large cheese pizza for this bitch or whatever, like this cheap asshole won't, you know. It was in like receipt font. It was crazy. But
where are you from? St. Louis?
Yeah.
So is my mom. A lot of my family is.
Whoa.
Yeah.
A fun lie to tell to people if you're driving into St. Louis is that the arch goes underground.
That is a good one. That is good.
I think someone told it to me and I was like, oh yeah, that sounds totally feasible. Let's go check it out.
I just started watching Survivor for the first time, and I watched my first season. I finished my first season, and in this season there's a competitor from St. Louis, and I was like never more proud to be from St. Louis.
That's like The Bachelor of Philadelphia right now, how I'm like feeling about that.
Oh, right, right.
Even though he's kind of in Hawaii, he's kind of like in Hawaii. But then his family is like, there's some super Philly characters on this season of The Bachelor, right, which is just wrapping up. No spoilers here.
No spoilers. So what are you going to do a sequel together, or what project are you working on now? I'll ask Joe first.
I do have an idea for something, but I'm not sure if it's going to be like, I've been writing things and putting things together like this. This is like what I went to college for back when I thought I was going to do something. And I've been like writing things forever. And then I just don't like it when it finishes, you know, where I'm like, this is no good. And so we'll see how long it takes to like get to something that feels like it's ready. But I have the kind of an idea and it's a little more miserable than this. Yeah. But there can be some humor in it, but that maybe less. I don't know yet.
All right.
Your turn, Marissa.
Solid. All right. I'm going to close this out with a really good movie idea that I had the other day.
Mm-hmm.
You ready? Mm-hmm. All right. So it's going to be like this dystopian, like sci-fi flick, right? So we'll get that guy who does like Michael Bay. Is this the Transformers guy? Maybe that guy the guy who did like Blade Runner 2049. Like he can do it. Okay.
Dennis Hallowed.
Keep it short. there's a guy, he's regular old, you know, John Smith dude. He works at an Amazon Prime warehouse. He wants to start a union. He gets all the workers galvanized. They're going to rallies. They're doing the thing. They're going to get unionized. All of a sudden, this is like, all right, movie's halfway done, right? The union gets busted. They don't like it. Jeff Bezos like got some like clowns and something to come arrest John Smith. He gets kidnapped. He gets like mysteriously put in this holding cell. He's having a real hard time there. And he gets knocked out at a certain point. And when he wakes up, he's human centipede style affixed to this long line of oh, sorry, I'm doing this bad. This is a bad pitch.
No, we're riveted.
Oh, okay. He's surgically affixed to a human centipede that's so long, it snakes around the aisles and bins of an Amazon Prime fulfillment center. And that's the end. Does you get what I'm saying? Right? That's scary, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Do you know any, like, big, like, head honcho kind of, like, fat cats in Hollywood who would want to budget this?
I
and then maybe you could go in and do say mm-hmm. what I said, but better.
I saw Optimus Prime. Does that help? I saw Optimus Prime at Universal Studios.
Yes. Well, this is going to be called Human Centipede Prime. Right? Or whatever. What are they up to? Four?
We saw, Marissa, we saw four. Yeah, you did, didn't we? Watch four together?
No, I tried watching one and it would gross me out. And I turned it off.
Wait. Oh, not human Centipede. I thought you meant Transformers. I like,
oh my
we've
God,
seen a lot
no.
of Transformers
yes, we saw
together.
Transformers. Anyway, that's my movie idea. I wish I could have pitched it better now that we're on this huge platform, but like I blew it. So
I thought you did really good.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Maybe I'll be really rich and powerful, like in the movie business soon, because I'm just like that's not just I have a lot of good ideas, not just that one.
Well, hold on. So listen, what if Amazon buys it,
that's
and then
fine.
You have to call the company something else? What do you call it?
Blamazon.
Okay.
Like, just stick another word up there and the check mark will be backwards or something.
Joe, can you tell us what you're in LA working on, or is it like too secretive?
It's not too secretive. I work for the show After Midnight on CBS with host Taylor Tomlinson.
That sounds late.
It is. It's on at 12:37 a.m. Mondays through Fridays.
Well, I hope you get to get a nap in.
Do you ever need to buy cheap jokes from somebody?
Wow. You know, it's really enticing. I do think there are laws against it, but, you know, Joe.
There are?
Yeah, I think so. They used to be a little bit fast and loose, and now the unions are like, where'd you get that joke, sucker? And then you're like, I got it from my friend who's writing for this show. And then you got it. But, you know, I think that it used to be a lot looser.
Yeah.
But listen,
if you ever need to punch up.
If they loosen up again, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
That's my other dream. I want someone to call me.
Send the jokes on Signal.
Oh, yeah, I'll Signal them. That's a good idea.
No problem.
We'll get on Signal. A lot of people are doing protests. We're saying we're passing jokes.
There's a new thing like Telegraph or Telegram. It's like even more underground than Signal. I had to sign up for it recently.
There's nothing more underground than Signal.
I thought so, too. And I was like, why am I learning a new platform for buying illicit like items, you know?
Oh my God, Joe.
And then what?
It's a family podcast.
You do another book, or maybe you turn Merriment into a show for Amazon. You know, I think that could also work.
Yeah, sure.
Do you want it? Do you want it? Like to pitch to places?
I think you need to, you know, constant IP content. Yeah, I think it'd be good. But yeah. I really do. I will say this. I just want to say I loved the book so much. It is beautiful, funny, poignant. I enjoyed my Sunday so much reading it. So thank you,
Joe. You're my favorite celebrity.
Wow.
I know.
Out of all the celebrities I know about.
We are truly obsessed with your work, like for real. So that's why when you just wanted to do it or hearing you say these kind words is like kind of, amazing.
Well, it's mutual.
Make some merch.
Okay.
Joe Firestone merch. I need a shirt. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe
a fitted
hat.
I wear a shirt.
Maybe a nice hat.
I wear a shirt.
A hat, little bike hat.
I don't need a
tiny
hat.
Okay, no.
Like a beanie.
Full size. Full size hats.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. This was a great talk house.
Great.
Thanks for listening to the Talkhouse podcast, and thanks to Joe Firestone, Marissa Paternoster, and Joe Steinhardt for chatting. If you liked what you heard, please follow Talkhouse on your favorite podcasting platform and check out all the great stuff at talkhouse.com. This episode was produced by Myron Kaplan, and the Talkhouse theme is composed and performed by The Range. See you next time.